arts episode.
Sector jobs have not grown fast enough to reduce the unemployment rate, which is running at 9.5%. Bernanke said the U.S. Central Bank is ready to ease monetary policy to boost the faltering economic recovery. U.S. stocks declined after Mr. Bernanke's remarks.
Bank Supervision Department will be happy to take those comments. So we want to hear that.
Once again, thank you.
To shed some light on this, I'm joined by Mr. Denny Schechter. He is an editor with MediaChannel.org from New York. Mr. Schechter, it's good to have you with us. Mr. Bernanke's warning of an uncertain economic outlook affected the stock markets adversely. Did this come as a surprise to the markets, and why do you think that?
I don't think so. Most of the financial bloggers and analysts I've been reading have been talking about, you know, unemployment remaining high, the threat of deficits and bankruptcies at state and local governments, some 800 banks insolvent in the United States, only six doing well. You know, this is a ongoing economic crisis, and there's no joke about it. This has been compared to a sort of a double dip recession already, and there's a threat of a depression, according to Paul Krugman of the New York Times. So the situation is not getting any better, and the prospects for it getting better have not been enhanced by the financial reform bill that President Obama signed today, because it really doesn't deal with the structural and systemic problems that are behind this crisis.
Right. Mr. Schechter, the Fed chairman said the financial conditions have become less supportive of economic growth as the financial markets, particularly in Europe, have not recovered. How is this going to affect the U.S. economic growth?
Well, I think it's affecting us in several ways. First of all, it's leading to a great deal of misery for American people and American working people particularly. That's why the Senate just passed a bill to give 2.1 million people an extension of their unemployment benefits, which were running out. People are reaching a desperate state. There's reports of a million more foreclosures of people's homes this year, which adds to the whole a sense of a lack of confidence in the economy. This is not very good for the Obama administration as it faces an election in the fall, because it will be blamed for this, even if it's not responsible for it. Many of the problems that have led to this are problems that, you know, started many, many years ago. The deregulation of the financial markets, the various chicanery on Wall Street. I've done a film about this called Plunder, the Crime of Our Time, showing how criminal activity has been very key to the collapse of our economy. So this is something that needs more sustained attention. It needs a government that will really crack down on Wall Street, and it hasn't done that yet.
Right, and one final question. Mr. Bernanke made it clear that the jobs lost in the last couple of years would be a hurdle in the economic recovery. Meanwhile, he says policymakers still believe the economy is on a path to recovery. How do you comment on these seemingly contradictory statements, aren't they?
Well, you know, they're very consistent with what we've heard constantly. You know, part of his function is to be a cheerleader for the economy, to stress all the positives, to kind of suggest that everything is coming back. And they keep doing that, and then they turn around and say, oops, it's not as going as fast as we wanted it to. It's not going as deep as we wanted it to. And as a result, they're giving contradictory signals to the public, which is growing increasingly cynical about government forecasts and Bernanke himself.
Many thanks. Danny Schechter, editor with MediaChannel.org in New York. Well, embattled energy giant BP, which is blamed for the worst environmental disaster in United States history, spent huge money on lobbying U.S. politicians.
Well, according to congressional filings, BP has paid over $1.7 million to reach out to influential policymakers during the second quarter of this year. The bulk of the money has been paid to firms such as Podesta Group and Durberstein Group from April through June. The two companies are run by former powerful U.S. politicians. Meanwhile, on Tuesday, a federal panel investigating the oil leak was expected to question some top BP men, but the session was cancelled. BP officials say lobbying congressmen would help them make their case heard. The damaged oil well has recently been capped, but BP is still a long way off ending the crisis. The leak has caused massive damage to the wildlife in the Gulf of Mexico by letting an estimated 180 million gallons of oil into the waters. Well, the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution has slammed the United States and Britain for fueling terrorism in the region.
Well, the leader's statement comes as Iranians are mourning the victims of a terrorist attack in southeastern Iran.
Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei says the blind and savage terrorism in the Middle East is the result of the evil policies of the United States and Britain, as well as their governmental and non-governmental mercenaries. Iran's leader called on all Muslims to confront the evil issue. Ayatollah Khamenei also said Zahedan's bloody incident was supported and plotted by foreign spy agencies aimed at dividing Iranian Muslims. Meanwhile, Iran's interior minister says Tehran will give a firm response to those responsible for the Zahedan bombings.
We will harshly punish the terrorists and those who support them and let them cross their borders. The neighboring countries should not turn into a safe haven for those outlaws who act against Iran's interests.
Iranian officials have repeatedly blamed the West's double standard in its so-called war on terror. Ringleader of Jundullah terrorist group Abdulmalek Righi, who was arrested and executed in Iran, confessed that he had received extensive support from the U.S. and NATO. But is Jundullah the only militant group benefiting from U.S. support? A former CIA officer believes otherwise. Ray McGovern has written about reports that say
President George W. Bush signed an intelligence finding in late 2007 that allocated up to $400 million to covert operations intended to destabilize Iran's government, in part by supporting militant organizations. Jundullah has been spurred from the State Department's list of terrorist groups, a possible indication that the U.S. government views it as a valuable asset in the face-off against Iran, or in the parlance of the war on terror, as one of the good guys.
A car bomb has killed 30 people and wounded another 46 in Iraq's central city of Bakuba. The explosion hit near a mosque in the eastern part of the city. The victims have been rushed to hospital. Women and children are among the dead and wounded. The number of casualties is expected to rise. A building has also collapsed. Police have imposed a curfew, predicting more bomb attacks in the area. The Iraqi government has been in limbo more than 4 months now since general elections were held. No single bloc has won an overall parliamentary majority. The two lists, which won the most seats, are still undecided on who the next prime minister should be. Officials have warned if the negotiations drag on, violence may see a surge.
It's 2:40 a.m. in Tehran. Let's give you a reminder of this hour's top stories. The U.S. Fed chairman warns of quote-unquote unusually uncertain economic outlook, as we've been discussing here on Press TV. Iran's leader blames the U.S. and Britain for blind terrorism in the region. And car bomb in Iraq's Bakuba kills dozens as talks on forming a government continue.
Still to come here on Press TV, alarm is raised on a growing AIDS epidemic worldwide. Now, some 322 British soldiers have died in Afghanistan since the war began in 2001, with many more thousands injured.
Prime Minister David Cameron has announced that British Army would start withdrawing troops from Afghanistan as early as next year. But do British people believe that he can meet this deadline? Farina Alam reports on that from London.
In the last year or so, the number of British soldiers returning in body bags from Afghanistan has risen sharply, and with it the public's anger against the war. Prime Minister David Cameron's announcement this week that some troops may be withdrawn as early as 2011 and the rest by 2015 was greeted with caution on the streets of London.
It seems like it's just all words now. He could just be saying this, and then when it comes to a few months' time, we never really know what will happen, and it's not really any concrete promises.
Politicians have a habit of bending with the wind, don't they? So regardless of what's going to happen in Afghanistan, people do things for political expediency rather than the long-term goal, don't they?
Cameron warned the 2011 partial withdrawal plans would depend on the security situation on the ground, and that the war has been instrumental in preventing terrorism on British soil. Attacks on foreign troops by Afghan police and soldiers in training have dominated the headlines this month, however. Many fear the local forces may never be ready to take over the governing of their own country.
One of the problems that especially the United States, but also other countries, have by invading other countries and trying to liberate or to free the people, they seem to have the idea that they will be welcomed with flowers and this and that, and they are not concerned about the situation afterwards.
The anti-war movement in the UK believe the government is risking lives in anticipation of an elusive military victory in Afghanistan.
Rather than drawing the logical conclusion from that, which is we need to get out now in order to save more lives, what they're saying is we're going to get out in 2014 seems to be the... And even that's not certain.
British public opinion is firmly behind the idea of withdrawing the troops. So what is the government so afraid of?
To actually just pull out now and accept reality would be a foreign policy disaster for them. So they're worried about another Vietnam syndrome. They're worried that people won't believe that they can fly into any corner of the world and impose their will. And so that's what's keeping them there. Shockingly, that's what's keeping them there, even though they know really they can't win.
Britain currently has almost 10,000 troops in Afghanistan. Since the war began 9 years ago, 322 have been killed, thousands more injured. Farina Alam, Press TV, London.
France and Germany have issued a strong warning to Eurozone countries that have failed to manage their economies within acceptable standards of governance.
Well, they've listed a range of possible sanctions and penalties for transgressors, as Press TV's Mark Vautier reports.
The more robust members of the Eurozone, such as Germany and France, are slowly pulling through after the worst downturn since the Great Depression of the 1930s. But the so-called Club Med countries, Greece, Spain and Portugal, are still feeling significant pain. Spain, for example, has an official unemployment rate of 20%, and Greece has only avoided bankruptcy because the EU and IMF had to establish a 750 billion euro borrowing reserve. Now, French Finance Minister Christine Lagarde and her German counterpart Wolfgang Schäuble want to strengthen surveillance and transparency in accounting to ensure budget plans are kept to and there's no more cooking the books. They've produced a joint policy paper warning of tough penalties for those countries that breach the Eurozone's Stability and Growth Pact.
So this is a key moment where we jointly, together, propose specific measures to strengthen Europe, and it's our way to express our determination to share the same ambition, to insist on the stability and unity of the European Union, and more particularly the Eurozone, for which we share the same currency.
The threats for offending member states include the swift imposition of fines and suspending EU voting rights. German Finance Minister Schäuble said imposing new types of sanctions could even mean revising existing European Union treaties. As for Greece, Madame Lagarde reiterated previous warnings that Athens must put its financial house in order. Greece's national debt stands at 300 billion euros, about 60,000 euros for each of its 5 million workers.
in accordance with both the Commission and the IMF, which have both gone to the field, is that there is actual delivery against commitment.
France and Germany are by far the two largest economies in the Eurozone and have traditionally been the most influential in EU policy making. Their position paper is tough because they believe tough action is needed to sort out the debt-ridden mess the European economy has become. And it reflects the resentments felt by many French and German taxpayers who see themselves as having to pay for the mistakes, corruption and abuse of some of their less financially disciplined neighbours. Mark Vautier, Press TV, Paris.
And the 18th International AIDS Conference, which is coming to an end in Vienna, has warned of a growing AIDS epidemic worldwide.
Activists and healthcare officials called for more government support and better funding of the battle against AIDS. Eva Manasieva now reports.
The 18th International AIDS Conference brought together over 30,000 participants in the Austrian capital, Vienna. And the motto of the event, Rights Here, Right Now, aimed not only to raise public awareness, but also to show that treatment and prevention are for everybody, rich and poor alike.
There's still 10 million people waiting for treatment. There's still 10 million people who will be in need of treatment. That is an important figure, and you will also have heard that at this conference a lot of the people who come here, specifically civil society, are very concerned about the fact that the funding is flatlining.
And even though the World Health Organization has managed to reduce the HIV treatment costs significantly in the last 8 years, many patients, especially in sub-Saharan Africa and Central Asia, the worst affected regions, still cannot afford a treatment. And as funding HIV/AIDS treatment in those regions remains an outstanding problem, activists offer a solution that they say could help thousands of patients in need, the so-called Robin Hood tax.
The trades that big financial institutions, the kinds of financial institutions that actually created the financial crisis, a small tax on some of the transactions that they make every single day in order to raise the tens of billions of dollars that are needed to fund HIV treatment scale-up.
Activists also slammed governments for showing an empty pocket every time it comes to funding healthcare, saying it was outrageous that world leaders simply let health come last on the line. And the head of the UN AIDS program, Michel Sidibe, expressed a similar concern, saying heads of state must be prodded into action.
400,000 new infections were averted in Africa, but we have 10 million people whose lives are hanging in balance. We are seeing a reduction on funding by almost $600 million for the first time in Europe.
WHO estimates that 1.2 million people started treatment in 2009, bringing the total number of people receiving treatment to 5.2 million compared to 4 million at the end of 2008. Again, by 2008, the number of people living with HIV was an estimated 33.4 million. Even though the magic bullet that would kill the HIV virus is still not invented, this conference wraps up with optimism. It was a powerful exchange of minds from all over the world, a forum where every single point of view makes a big difference for those living with HIV. Eva Manasieva, Press TV, Vienna.
And that was the very latest headlines here on Press TV News. Do make sure to log on to our website, though, presstv.com, for the latest on all our stories and programs. Top story of the day. The U.S. Federal Chairman warns of unusually uncertain economic outlook. That and much more from around the world, presstv.com.